Now, here's Morris Jessup. I've been wanting to have a visit with you for a long time. I hear you're back from Mexico.
Yes, I've been back about 6 weeks. I had a very interesting trip down there. I was able to work with the Mexican government and had access to 1 million photographs taken from the air over Mexico. And from these, I have been able to find at least 15 what I call extraterrestrial craters, and possibly a number of other ones, although the other ones are too small to verify from photographs taken at high altitudes. The ones which I have been able to study in detail are very large, the biggest one being about 1.5 miles across, and the smallest one about 600 to 800 yards. I'm quite convinced that this group of craters was made by something arriving on Earth from space. And since the geologists tell me that they may not have been made by meteors, we have to look for other causes as well as meteors. It's my opinion that these craters were made at the time when the continent of Atlantis was destroyed, and that the entire Caribbean Sea and Gulf of Mexico area results from an impact of either a large group of objects from space or from a comet, and that this physical evidence which I am uncovering in and near Mexico and around the Caribbean Gulf of Mexico area represents the physical debris and results of the cataclysm which Emmanuel Velikovsky has outlined in his three books.
Well, didn't I hear you say once that you thought there was some similarity or relationship between those and the type of thing that's visible on the moon, the craters?
Near as I can make out, these craters in Mexico are identical in appearance with the smaller craters, which are just barely within the limits of small telescopes, but which are seen with large telescopes. There are many, many thousands of craters on the moon that range in size from 0.5 mile to 5 or 10 miles in diameter, and these craters are, you might say, laboratory specimens of what exists on the moon. Not only that, but a large number of them are in the geographical areas in Mexico, which look just like the areas on the moon where these little craters appear, and makes an environment or surroundings exactly of the same nature as those on the moon, including the desert or semi-desert conditions, so that the craters could be associated with lunar craters one way or another.
Well, where did I hear that hint that these craters might possibly be some kind of hangars for flying saucers? Did I get that from you or someone else?
It could be. I have considered that. I haven't found any conclusive evidence for anything like that. But on the other hand, I have not had much time to spend in the field. Certainly, they are not being used for that purpose at present because there are people all around them, and if anything like that was going on, it would be known. But there are rumors that craters down on the border of Guatemala and Mexico are being used for that purpose, and I think Wilkins has reported that in one of his books.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got your new book today about the UFO and the Bible.
Well, that's just a curtain raiser to the problem of UFO in the Bible.
I've had time to read only the introduction, and I think that is beautifully written. If the rest of it is like that, it's going to be really worthwhile.
Well, the rest of it is more analytical than the introduction. It was very difficult to present a problem of such magnitude, or even to outline a problem of such magnitude in a short little book like this. In fact, this book was written as a chapter in the expanding case for the UFO, which will be out probably in September or October. But the publishers liked the little story about the Bible so well that they decided they would just lift it out and make a separate book of it, so I wrote the introduction after they had done that. Actually, I have not tried to cover the so-called classic Bible references, such as Ezekiel's wheel, for instance, or the taking of Elijah to heaven in a fiery chariot, or whatever it may have been. But I have tried more to perhaps take a philosophical view and to interpret the spirit of what the Bible has to convey to us, rather to set the stage for what which is to come. I have selected as text, if I may use the preacher's term, selected the 13th chapter of St. Mark, which seemed to me to cover in a very brief form almost all possible phases of UFO and space life activity. And I've used this as a cross-section and just as a sort of a preparation for other work. In fact, I'm continuing the work right now.
How many more books did you say are in the offing?
I would say that three more books on the Bible is the minimum in which I can cover all of the UFO material which I see in the Bible as I'm reading it today.
And the UFO annual, is that coming out again?
We're not sure. Citadel told me to go ahead collecting material. I just heard from them this week. That there certainly will be another volume of this kind. They're not sure whether they want to make it an annual or a biannual, but if they make anything, I feel sure it will be an annual, because a biannual doesn't make any sense at all. It's not current enough.
Well, this is practically your life work now, isn't it?
Well, I'm not doing anything else except I'm the lawnmower at the moment.
Well, the subject owns us. It's so much bigger than we are. I don't blame you.
Well, that is certainly the truth. This subject takes hold of you and practically become a slave to it.
Yeah.
It's a little hard to explain, but once you get into it, you recognize the length and the breadth and the depth of it to a point where it is not only amazing, but perhaps appalling as well.
I was interested in your view we were talking about a little while ago, the philosophical picture. It wasn't too bright, the way you put it, but I guess we can all agree that the world is in a state that
the world is certainly in a mess that we can agree on. Now, whether a new concept will straighten it out or not, I don't know. I have a friend that I correspond with in Arizona who says it's already too late, that the human race is beyond saving. I think that is a little bit on the pessimistic side, and if I didn't think it was pessimistic, I don't think I would waste any time writing books. That wouldn't be worth the effort.
Well, sometimes I'm overwhelmed at what man has done through science, a terrific accomplishment. There's just something there about his moral nature that doesn't get straightened out. And I wonder if this new dimension that we're facing, whatever it is, will perhaps be a means of getting us in balance again.
I think there is a possibility of exactly that. It certainly is true that all through the 20th century, and perhaps slightly before the beginning of the 20th century, that science has been running ahead of the man in the street. And in the past, the past 30 years, this gap has been widening very seriously, and in the past 10 years, it's been widening at a very alarming rate. Of course, it's been said that Isaac Newton was the last human being who would ever know all the science of his time, and that was probably true. But I don't know hardly what can be done about it. It seems that once, if you try to talk about slowing science up, Immediately, everybody screams that you're impeding progress, and maybe they're right, but I think sometimes we're confusing change with progress and don't actually know that we aren't truly progressing. It's certainly true that science has set up a vast framework of the material or purely mechanical phases of the world we live in, and as far as science has gone, it has pretty much proved its points and consolidated its gains. But science is just as bigoted today and just as arrogant as the church was in the dark and middle ages, and where the church overlooked what most of us consider to be reality, science is in turn overlooking all of the, nearly all of the spiritual values, and I think both of them have missed the boat.
What we need is a great synthesis.
I think that is exactly right, and I'm writing these books about the Bible with precisely that in mind, that we should perhaps start another school of thought which will consolidate what both religion and science have given us from the past. I think if we don't do something like that and do it very, very quickly, that the human race is just going to fall apart for lack of, might say, intellectual cement.
That's well put. Oh, I'm sure we can't stop science. The momentum is going too fast. But it puts a great responsibility on the few who have vision and who have a synthesizing view of this thing. Try to get it in line. I think your books are going to play a big part in this, because I know how sincere you are, and I also have to know that you're what I call a born researcher. There aren't too many of those.
That's true.
And then being a real astronomer, too, there's not any too many of those in this field.
Well, as far as I know, there aren't any other ones in the field except Mansell, and he's in it in a completely negative way, so
yeah.
Somebody's got to get in and offset what he has to say on the subject, and we're going to keep on being lopsided in the matter.
Mr. Jessup, I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Okay.
Getting back to your current research on the UFO and the Bible, rough figures, just about how many references would you say exist in the King James Version of the Christian Bible today?
I haven't made an analytical study all the way through the Bible yet. I have covered in an intense way so far the five books of Moses, and just in this part of the Bible there certainly are hundreds of either direct or indirect references to UFO or related phenomena. I wouldn't want to be quoted on how many there actually are in the Bible, because as sure as I am quoted, somebody will go out and count them, and his interpretation of what's a UFO reference will differ from mine, and he'll know more about the Bible than I do, perhaps, and so we'll come up with two different figures. But certainly, directly and indirectly, there must be thousands, literally thousands, of references in the Bible.
Would you say that's divided equally between the Old Testament and New Testament? Does, or do the larger amount of sightings seem to occur in the Old Testament? Or is there any way
I don't think I am yet competent to answer that question quantitatively. From what I have seen of the Old Testament, the references are just tremendous. I think also the Old Testament being a much longer work, that even if you had the same number of references per chapter or book, that the weight of it would be in favor of the Old Testament. I don't think I can answer that yet until I've completed this study, and I think it'll take me a year to complete it, so quite a long time off.
Have you had or do you anticipate any criticism from organized theology in any way at all, any criticism of your books?
I'm buying a real estate inside of one of these craters in Mexico for just that contingency.
I'd like to ask a few questions about your recent trip to Mexico. You mentioned something about pictures you had been examining. Have you been looking at pictures of actual UFO phenomena, or mostly other types?
This was in connection with the crater study, It was the Mexican government is very cooperative and very sympathetic to research, and whether it's a UFO or any type of research. And the government, unofficially but very kindly, made available to me a whole room full of aerial photographs on which I could search for new examples of the craters and study their geographical location with respect to each other. Some of these photographs will undoubtedly, in the long run, contribute to a solution of what caused the craters and how long they've been there and whether or not they're of any use to us or anyone else at present time. But the work is very preliminary, and it was only towards the very end of my trip that I did succeed in getting this very kind cooperation from the government down there. I went out and climbed into, I believe, a total of 8 out of the 15 that I know about. And I personally am thoroughly convinced from the photographs and from this very quick fieldwork that they were caused by something from space.
Well, most of your trip then was concerned with this crater research then instead of UFO?
That is correct. I did not go to Mexico to primarily to study UFO. I went for 2 purposes. One was vacation from writing and all of this heavy pondering and analysis that goes with this type of writing, and to get out in the open and check into my craters, which I hadn't visited for about 4 years.
Would you care to make any comment about UFO activity in Mexico in general? Any conversations you might have had down there indirectly as a result of your trip?
I didn't have many conversations directly about UFO. I found from talking with 3 or 4 different people that the officials of the Mexican government are very much concerned about this problem and much more willing to talk about it than the officials of some other governments that one might name. And the newspapers are much more open-minded. I found the staff of La Prensa, for instance, the largest circulation newspaper in Mexico, to be intensely interested in this problem. And as soon as they knew of my interest in Mexico and in the craters and in the UFO, I was dragged around through this big building and introduced to everybody from the elevator boy on up to the owner and the managing editor. I might say also that La Prensa has bought the Mexican rights for the case for the UFO, and I saw the Spanish translation, also the cover for the book, and it should be off the press in Spanish within another month, I would say, probably in August.
Since you have made it quite clear that most of your activity in Mexico was with other direct activities than UFO, do you care to say anything in conclusion for this tape in regards to flying saucers in general all over the world? Any recent observations on your part you care to speak about?
Well, I get fan mail, of course, all the time, and not as much perhaps as some of the writers who deal in more in current sightings, but I've been getting another influx of mail since the annual came out. And while there seems to have been a lull in sightings, this lull is partly due to a lack of reporting facilities rather than an actual absence of UFO activity. And I think it's more urgent than it's ever been before that a worldwide reporting system be set up and a centralized clearinghouse be organized so that if the governments are going to put pressure on or sneer the whole field into a ridiculous state, that those who really know what's going on can get the information. Even my clipping service doesn't give me complete coverage. I didn't get one single clipping for the big sightings in Cincinnati last August from the clipping service, and I would honestly like to see some organization perhaps subsidized or financed.
You mean a civilian organization?
A civilian organization of people who are serious about this subject. We're never going to get it from our government. That's what
there's a lot of talk about that.
Well, I'd like to see it, and if it's going to be suppressed or discouraged in this country, I'd like to see it set up in Mexico where people are really open-minded about it.
Well, Well, Wilkins says that this government or England will never tell.
But never is a long time. I think that we might smoke them out eventually.
He says it's up to the civilians.
Well, I think that's right.
Well, I understand you have acquired the name of Uncle UFO or something like that, haven't you?
Well, somebody has called me Old Man UFO, but the name is getting to be a little in disrepute in the family circles.
Well, anyway, I think you hold a very big place in this research.
Well, I'm trying to supply the background which will make the work of other people less radical or less objectionable to the public in general. If I can show that these sightings which other people are reporting and discussing, and I think particularly of the wonderful job that Major Kehoe has done in bringing the current activities to the front, if I can supply the factual background data and show that not only is this whole activity logical, but that it's real and it's been here for a long time, I think I will have served perhaps all the purpose that one person has any right to.
Well, I think you will have served a big purpose. We're all on different facets of this thing. Have you noticed?
Yes, everybody.
We all contribute something just a little different, some a great deal more than others. I think Mr. Keziah's chart here is unique.
Certainly is. It would be a good piece of reference work for any researcher to have on his wall at all times.
Well, I'm very happy we could have had this little chat. And I hope you'll come soon again.
I'll be very happy to.